I was at a party at Stanford Blockchain, like after, you know, like after party. It was like maybe five, like, you know, relatively VCs were like standing around in a circle. And this lady literally came out and literally two hand pushed me out of the circle to pitch everybody else. Like, she didn't know who I was. She just like literally two hand pushed me and started like pitching them Pi Token.
Welcome back to the Web3 podcast. I'm Will. This is Evan. We got some breaking news, Evan. SBF is going back to jail. His bail bond was just declined, and he has to go back for sending his girlfriend's diary to the New York Times.
That's unbelievable that he's not been in jail for the last year, isn't it? I've never been able to wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, the whole bail thing was pretty stupid. It was $250 million, but it was secured by his parents' house, which was worth like less than $5 million, and then some like donations or whatever.
In Palo Alto, which means that it's a shack.
It's true. So the first instance of there being a problem was the VPN thing, which he watched the Super Bowl on. And then the second instance was him giving Caroline L. Yeah, watched the Super Bowl on, air quotes for those listening here from Evan. Then it was Caroline Ellison, his former girlfriend, and then CEO of Alameda Research. He gave her diary to the New York Times, which was a
CEO.
Yeah, more, I mean, like CEO. Air quotes. I thought you were putting that under girlfriend, and I was like, I don't know. The details there are pretty clear. So, a lot going on. Okay, we're not a breaking news show, but yeah, talk about that. It's pretty funny stuff.
You remember when $500 million, like $400 or $500 million, was stolen right when he got arrested?
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that.
So why didn't they ever take his computer away in the first place completely? It's come out that they had very bad private key management, and they were storing these private keys that had billions of dollars on them in plain text in Google Docs. But, you know, just speculation here. Like, who is the most shameless person about theft among that whole company that would still be willing to steal even after getting caught? But yet the feds never took away his computer access, nor did they put him in jail, despite stealing billions in a crazy Ponzi scheme. Like, man, it's good to be part of the establishment, isn't it?
I don't get it.
Okay. Unbelievable. I mean, Avi Eisenberg, right? Like, we talked about him last episode.
Yeah.
You can at least argue that he did something that is like maybe not entirely, you know, it's like somewhat in a gray area. You know, he de-pegged an Oracle, which makes it sound better than it actually is, but you know, and he goes to jail directly, is in jail, as far as I can know, never let out on bail. And yet SBF, who steals billions in the most brazen fraud Ponzi, like, oh yeah, he gets to go hang at his parents' house in Palo Alto and use the computer. Yeah. On a VPN, using the computer.
Amazing stuff right there. Okay.
It's amazing that he had to do all this stuff just to go back to jail. Unbelievable.
I want to talk about my tweet. I'm fired up about this. So no more SBF talk. He gets way too much time.
He does.
I tweeted this week, and I was excited to see your reaction in here. I should scroll in for our YouTube audience.
You got to read your tweet?
I'm going to read it in a second. By the way, we have a lot of different topics today. We're just going to flutter through them. Talk about Coinbase, talking about MakerDAO, talking about my tweets to gods, so much other stuff. So stick around with us. First one, my tweet. I set this out Tuesday night. I was at the airport in New York, and I got delayed by an extra 2 hours. I was a little salty, so I just shot this out there.
Spicy tweet time. I'm delayed at an airport.
I was upset. Southwest has gone for the dogs. Okay, so I said, Bitcoin people will tell you Ethereum sucks. Ethereum people will tell you Bitcoin sucks, but you will find both in all of these people's wallets. And I followed up, of course, with the GIF. Why are you booing me? I'm right. And I got a lot of salty. I had Adam back in there. I had Sassel in there. I had you in there. I had Corey Klippenstein in there. I had like everyone from both camps being like, no, I don't have the other coin. You suck. There was only a few people who actually agreed with me. So my own fault for teeing that up.
No, but I actually agree with you.
What I said. There we go. I like to hear that.
I mean, I don't have any Bitcoin and I would never hold
it's
Bitcoin.
It's rare.
And I never have. Yeah. But I do think that most people actually are like pro crypto, which again, I did air quotes around crypto, which I don't personally identify with at all. Like when I hear the word crypto, I generally think scam. But like, yeah. I think a lot of people, yeah, I mean, it's a vague word, right? So you can project whatever you want on it. A lot of people, when they think crypto, they think sort of like the original like Bitcoin ideals of, you know, which, you know, I would say has become the Ethereum ideals, but it's like a combination of like hard money, but also building a censorship resistant like applications and, you know, things that like, you know, can't be censored, can't be shut down. You own your own data, like stuff like that from, you know, like maybe more than 10 years ago now. And most people just want that to work. And so like, they're fine if it's Bitcoin, like they're fine if it's Ethereum, like they're fine if it's something else. Like if it's some new chain that comes out, like they would be totally fine with that. And so I think a lot of people actually hold both.
They don't care. Like, they don't care. They just want to go in and buy it on Coinbase and just sit with it. Like they buy maybe a little more Bitcoin than Ethereum if their friend tells them Bitcoin's cool, or they do the opposite. People say Ethereum's cool and people don't care. The people who do care are people who are in crypto and they go talk about it. And the only way you're going to get a big position on crypto Twitter is by shilling one bag. If you have both bags, it's really hard to get attention. But just some people who can, I'd say like Eric Wall and maybe Udi are two people, but Udi kind of faked it for a while and or not faked it. I don't know. I digress. Step away from it. There's only a few people I've met who are like actual hardcore liners on one side or the other. You'd be one of them. I've met a few Bitcoiners like that. A lot of like the Ethereum core devs I've met are like, no, they don't own Bitcoin. But most people in ordinary daily life who are interested in crypto, they're going to hold both because they don't really care, including a lot of these Bitcoin maximalists. I know a lot of them and they also hold other coins. They're just like not willing to talk about it because you lose your purity test. And then you're outside and you can't go to the events. You can't be involved in things. And that's what I got in this tweet was like well over 200 replies saying that Ethereum was a scam or vice versa.
Yeah, I was talking about the people that sort of like believe ideologically. But then there's some other people and like maybe they're louder on Twitter that also just want to buy whatever goes up. And,
yeah,
you know, if you are sort of that way and you're in this space, like you probably end up having both, right? I mean, that's like, these are the two most legit things. Buy a lot. Like everything else is like, you know, like I have big Near bags and like I like Near and I'm a fan of it. And, but like, you know, once you get out of Bitcoin and Ethereum, there is just a large gap of, you know, whatever legitimacy, whatever, maybe it's not the exact word, right? But like everything after that is, you know, it's much riskier. You know, the community could die, the founders could exit. I mean, all those sort of things, right? So
I want to play some tiers for any Bitcoiners that stumble onto this. Maybe Ethereum folks will like this. This is a video clip from Bitcoin Conference, I believe in 2022. I'll play it here. I think the audio people should be able to understand what's going on as well. Basically, someone on stage asked, raise your hand if you own general crypto, raise your hands if you own Ethereum. And a Bitcoin conference, the biggest Bitcoin conference in the world, be surprised to see.
This panel to ask two questions. Raise your hand if you don't own Bitcoin and don't be shy. I just want to know. Question. You all have Bitcoin?
Get out.
Okay. And raise your hand, and I'm dying to ask, like, I want to know if this room is a Bitcoin maxi room. Like, raise your hand if you own Ethereum.
No.
Okay. Okay.
Get out.
Get out. Is this the Bitcoin conference? What is this?
So it's hilarious. Awesome. I don't recognize any of those people on stage.
They're all maxis. I can name all
none of them. None of them raised their hands, but yet everybody in the audience basically raised their hands. I mean, I don't know what you would say, 75%?
Is like a decent percentage of that room that paid to go to a Bitcoin conference, expensive one down in Miami during the peak of heat. You know,
and we're at the panel, which apparently is the maxi panel.
Yeah. I mean, like all the panels are maxi panels, but that one in particular, it had Marty Bent, that had Robert Breedlove, that had a Swan guy on there, Will Clemente. So there was a lot of different maxis on that. Okay, let's move over to MakerDAO, our second story for the day, I guess, after my tweet, maybe third after your little anecdote there, which was fun. MakerDAO is making some changes. Rune Christensen, who is the founder of MakerDAO, long time, probably oldest DeFi developer out there. Any contention to that? You think he's the oldest? think he's pretty clear to the oldest.
That's reasonable. He had a stable coin before Ethereum existed on the EOS guy's previous chain.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Yeah. So like 2015 or so from what I've seen from this stuff. Okay. So 2014.
Even into 20. I mean, his previous thing was 2013, 2012.
Okay. So longtime developer, famous founder of MakerDAO. MakerDAO is the largest decentralized asset stablecoin, if you will, out there. There's about $4.4 billion worth of DAI in circulation. It's often just sort of seen as like the backbone of decentralized finance, or at least DAI is in a lot of ways. I can leave thoughts about USDC on the side for now. They've been making some changes recently, led by Rune, who's sort of wanted to see that the future of MakerDAO is made secure. He wants to make sure it's permissionless, it's decentralized, and that it's sovereign for the future, where there can be upwards of 100 billion DAI in circulation. Again, it only has about 4.4 billion DAI in circulation as of right now. So he wants to be able to 20x it or whatnot, get it to a far larger place than it is. His whole idea for this is this 5-part decentralization with these 6-part sub-DAO additions to the whole project. Essentially, they're going to take away a lot of the key parts that the MakerDAO ecosystem is in charge of right now, for like setting lending rates, collateral rates, for doing security, for doing the legalese, for doing the real world assets, and pushing these all to these sub-DAOs. These sub-DAOs will also have tokens issued to them, which is going to enable people to start farming sub-DAOs, start engaging with the sub-DAOs. The whole idea here is like MakerDAO itself has been like pretty bulletproof, but a lot of like the sub-components of it are not really fleshed out. And he wants to be able to ensure that MakerDAO can continue to exist in the future, and that these more tricky, complex parts can be worked on by like smaller independent groups that couldn't lead to like contagion of the main stack. I think it's a pretty novel and ambitious goal, especially reading through like a lot of the discussion forums. And it's also led to some people not being interested in being a part of the project anymore, notably A16Z, which offloaded a lot of their Maker tokens according to some on-chain analytics. That's the gist of the story for now. I'm going to throw it over to you for your take.
So first, real quick, you said Rune was a developer, which I think he might be a developer in the same way that like I'm not really a developer. Like I might write code here and there, but nobody ever really like lets me write code that gets into production. I think I can TLDR the whole Maker thing and much shorter, which is just, we're going to have a lot of tokens. Like we can work, like all these sub DAOs are sort of just excuses to have tokens. And Rune basically does admit this. And like, I think he has a thread where he calls it incentive alignment. And he basically says like, you know, DAOs and DeFi can make everything more aligned and coordinated. And then he, like the next tweet says, but wait, like everybody really just cares about their own self-interest. And so his basic idea is that he's going to have all these sub DAOs, which some of them like are going to be, you know, basically forks of other things in DeFi or similar ideas, which will allow Maker to sort of capture more of that value. But also like the idea, his idea is that there will be tokens which will help align that specific sub segment within Maker more clearly. Like it's a really interesting experiment, you know, whether it works, whether like more tokens will end up working or not, I think it remains to be seen. Also, you know, a bunch of these things have raised venture rounds, but MakerDAO sort of had the advantage that you could, like they did do some sales that they've sort of tried to hide in retrospect for the SEC. But you could almost always like just get in and buy Maker like in the early days if you really wanted to. You could like, there were ways to do it. And so it was like a relatively open thing. Like there's not like some, you know, OG class. Well, there is some OG class, but it's like from way back in the day. Whereas like now they're doing venture rounds and like it seems like it's just all Maker people that are in the venture rounds. And like, you know, I feel like that sort of remains to be seen whether if it's just the same people holding the tokens, like does it really end up incentivizing enough, you know? Like, I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, it's definitely super ambitious. I agree with them. Like MakerDAO is not what it needs to be if like DeFi is going to be a lot larger. Like for one thing, what they need to do is stop playing around with these like weird names they always have for all the protocol stuff. Like it's super confusing. So they kind of like, I think that was like their thing to like be different than everyone. But at this point, it's just like obnoxious. So they should change a lot of definitions. But I do agree, like this needs to be different if it's going to be bigger. You have to keep expanding and innovating. Let's leave it there, though.
I was going to say a different takeaway is also that actual decentralized stablecoins are actually really hard, and Rune has his trilemma. But basically, you know, it's like decentralized real world assets and scalability. If I got it right, but basically, right, like you have something like Liquidity, which is more decentralized than Maker now because Maker has real world assets, but it's not really scalable. And so it turns out that like there, right, like as we have it right now, stablecoins is not a solved space, right? Like you either have like, you know, bank deposits on chain like USDC or maybe Tether. You can see our last episode for our views on that. But or you know, it's like it's still out there, and like now this is Rune's attempt to like make Maker more scalable, both through real world assets and higher interest rates on chain, but also through like, you know, basically having some liquidity farming to make Maker more scalable. You know, Rune's a founder that has done a great job so far. So like, let's see, you know, it'll be fun to watch.
It's made it through so many issues. Like pre-2020, it had like a lot of interest rate issues. It'd keep jacking up the interest rate to like make it sustainable. And 2020 itself, they had a lot of problems because of COVID, and like the whole protocol almost had like a whole time bomb issue. Then post that, had like way much 2S USDC. It seems like it keeps getting out of the woods. So I like that they keep building on top of it. Let's go to Coinbase though, talk about the launch of Base Protocol, which happened earlier this week. It really happened back in July when, to my understanding, an accidental leak of the address led to a bunch of liquidity flowing into Base. Base, again, is an OP stack implementation for Coinbase itself. Calling it Base, there's no native token. It's using ETH, and they basically want to have in a bunch of brands building dApps on top of this L2, which pretty novel, also pretty awesome. I think it's great. They launched the protocol this week for realsies this time. It was for devs earlier, and people leaked the address, so a lot of money flew in. And now it's like
It was public. They just said like, you're not supposed to use it.
I didn't really understand it.
I thought it was weird too. But I mean, they said like, look, our RPC, we're purposely not making it scalable. So if people actually use it, then like you won't be able to read the chain unless you run your own node.
Yeah.
But like they didn't make it easy to run their own node either. So basically it was like their developer only launch. I found it weird. I don't think it made weak in Ethereum. Andrew and I talked about it, and we had a lot of arguments about
the like, snub.
You know, what is this, a fake like launch? Like I personally, it doesn't resonate with me. Like either launch or don't launch, but this whole like fake launch.
Yeah.
I don't know. As somebody that has had to decide for 5 years, like when do you really launch? Like just tell me when you launch.
Yeah.
Launch multiple times. That drives me nuts. It just feels like you're trying to like scam me into putting into weak Ethereum more.
That's exactly what they're thinking of in this case. No, so it has like $161 million in total value locked right now. I think the first day they had 10 million in volume. They're saying, according to Jesse Pollock, who's running Base as the head of it for Coinbase, they have 100 dApps on it. They're calling it On-Chain Summer, which is some sort of like marketing scheme. I think like Coca-Cola, Friends with Benefits, a few other companies are like jumping in to make dApps on top of it, which I'm curious to see how that looks like. There's another interview that CoinDesk did with, I think it was Jesse, maybe someone else, talking about like, what does this look like for a public company in the United States to be launching its own blockchain? And Jesse was like, oh, no one's ever done this before, so we'll see what it's like. I'm curious, like, what do you think about it with like all the SEC stuff going on? Like a lot of this isn't like fleshed out, and yet they're pushing forward with this, and they have partnerships with all these major brands.
Yeah, it's interesting. They do seem like they've done a pretty good job of getting some things on to go launch on Base. You know, they have Snoop Dogg who released an NFT, and I haven't like delved into the claim, so it's possible that it's all just a PR stunt. But he's been posting about how under his pseudonym Cosmo de Medici, about how he's been like, their project has been banned on Instagram and maybe other Facebook products. Sorry, y'all. I'm not going to say Meta. I refuse. It's Facebook. Also, don't call Google Alphabet. And then he also posted that Australia's largest internet provider banned their IP in Australia, which is pretty crazy. If so, like I said, like I haven't had time to really check, but like I know I did see for sure that he had tweeted that. Fascinating stuff. If actually getting banned, like I think the history of Coinbase is not necessarily that they have been the best product-oriented company. You know, for a while, I feel like Coinbase Wallet was the absolute worst wallet I had ever used, which that says something, right? and that was a few years ago. I haven't used it since. But in some ways, they are an example of how, as a startup, you can get one thing really right, which you know, they made it like they were safe. They didn't get hacked. And they had good fiat on and off ramps, which is the banking relationship, which, like, for example, other US-based exchanges haven't always had that, even of the majors. And so, you know, like you can just focus on doing those few things well. And if you find the right niche, like you can grow like crazy and be worth a lot of money, even if a lot of the other stuff is like, not so great. I don't know. I'm very curious to see whether they pull this off in the long run. They had a good little launch, though. I got to give them that.
They did have a big launch. I mean, like, that's a decent amount of volume, and a lot of the hype for it went off with Bald Token back in July. So props to them. I don't have much more to say on that. Like, I think we'll see what is built on Base, but I think we leave it there. Good job to them for launching something. I want to go talk about to Gods next. So that's what we're going to do. Okay, we're going to go over to NFT land, which is, I'll say it, it's not my favorite topic, nor an expertise for myself. Evan, do you like follow NFTs a lot with Weekend ETH News, or like, do you follow at least NFT tech stuff?
I am not a JPEG connoisseur, I think it's fair to say.
We're going to lose a whole audience right here. I think some of this does matter, though, and I'm going to tie it into like what I think is interesting in a second, which is like, how we see gas move on Ethereum, or like where contracts are moving long term. And like, that's a pretty good showcase for like where interest is for using Ethereum. But in this case, we saw that the gods this week is ditching Polygon, they're returning money and they're moving back to the Ethereum base chain. The gods is made by the labs, which is also runs Utes, another NFT project, returning the money to Polygon. That's well, novel. You never really see an NFT project do something like that. Normally you lose money for people, but they made some here, I guess, or returned it. And then the Ethereum thing, I think, is just kind of too, like, they want to be in the base layer for whatever reason. It's probably gonna be a lot more expensive for all these like NFT holders to move stuff around and flip it. I'm surprised they're not going with an L2, but they're choosing to go with an L1 and move away from, I believe, Solana previously.
Yeah, Solana to Matic or Polygon, now to Mainnet. I think it's an interesting case of, in the end, like, counter to the Ethereum narrative, like you said, of moving to an L2, like, Mainnet is still like the hub. Maybe Arbitrum in some senses has, and maybe like especially for DeFi, Optimism has some of its niche. Base has its little launch today, but you know, if you want to like be successful, it's still not obvious, you know, you're launching something. Like, we were just talking about Base. Would you launch it on Base or would you launch it on Mainnet? Like, right now, it's kind of, you know, if you want an element of people buying it and number go up, like, you launch it on Mainnet because that's where the degens are and that's where people are going to buy your stuff. And you know for sure there is liquidity there. Interestingly, like, this isn't, you know, them leaving Solana is not unique either. Rollbit actually was, you know, is this online casino, and they had basically, you know, it's mostly just an online casino, but they take crypto basically, right? So it's not like you're doing anything on chain except depositing, withdrawing. But they had a token and it was on Solana. And then a couple of weeks ago, they switched to Ethereum, and now the token has just taken off. So, like, I think it does go to show you, right? There is a whole, there's just like a liquidity moat, which is real. And, you know, I was surprised to see that Rollbit token took off when it moved to Ethereum. I actually thought it might be the opposite, but.
Yeah, I mean, like, some of what you're saying there kind of goes back to actually our conversation with Austin, which everyone should go check out if you have not listened to it yet. Assuming that most people have, but talking about like MetaMask, right? Like, it has this huge moat. And so, like, now they're concerned about supply chain attacks and less so about like usability, because they already won that war. And I think with Ethereum, it's somewhat similar in a sense, like, they won that war. Like, they're the biggest L1 out there for smart contracts and for anyone who's trying to develop something. So, like, this is where people are going to move. Like, it just has that advantage where it's the big sinkhole and everyone's going to move to it eventually. Like, they're going to leave Solana. I think I read some stuff about the gods change from Solana over to Polygon and over to Ethereum. And their basic idea was like, hey, we're capped on Solana. We can't grow anymore. And why is that? Because like most people are like have MetaMask. MetaMask has like millions of downloads at this point. Most people like are familiar with Ethereum. It has more of a brand name. So I want to tie it into like more of a techie markets perspective here. And this is a chart I always like to look at, which shows different volumes of gas on top of Ethereum over like a certain period of time. And if you become familiar with this, you'd start to understand like where adoption is settling for each sort of like product that Ethereum brings to bear. So for like our listeners right now, we're just looking at like at a chart, and each part of the chart has like a little bit of a different section with users scaled into it. Well, I'm doing a very bad job explaining this. Each part of the chart shows a percentage of how much Ethereum gas is being used by a different product in Ethereum. So whether it be like a DEX or an MEV bot or a bridge, something like that. I think like NFTs during the hype cycle of 2021 made up a large portion of this. Right now, it's not like huge, as we can see from this graph, which is from Etherscan. It's like a not even really on here. But we can also look at some other data, for example, the burn rate for Ethereum. And it shows that out of the top 10 different things that are burning ETH right now, DeFi L2s are number one and two, but NFTs are third, followed by transfers, miscellaneous stuff, and MEV. So like NFTs still really matter for like the tokenomics of Ethereum. And I would assume if we looked into this data that we're showing right now on screen with the top categories of share of gas fees, you would see something for NFTs where they make up like a sliver of user percentages over time. Okay, let's go away from that whole topic with NFTs, wash our hands of it, and go talk about a scammier project, Aptos, which announced this week that they are working with Microsoft. The classic pitch, if I've ever heard of one. They're launching a chat AI bot with Microsoft. You and I were chatting about this beforehand, and you told me a little bit about how you've seen some of like the pitches from these like corporate blockchains, I guess, for lack of a better term, and how they kind of roll out their marketing stunts. What'd you think about this headline?
I didn't look closely into this. However, I know that like there is a whole industry of people that launch chains, and they know the people that are out there that will sell, like vendors at companies, big companies that will sell because, you know, it's their incentive to sell. Like, you work at Google Cloud and, you know, you want to get, if you think that some chain will, you know, put some of their nodes on your thing, like you can sell them cloud services at a markup and okay, whatever, like you look good, you make money, your number go up in your, you know, internal review. So you don't care. The chain likes it because they put out a press release partnership with Google or Microsoft or whatever. And then, you know, the crypto media will put it, like, will write an article about it because they know that it will get views because the chain will promote it, right? And, you know, to me, it's just like a, I don't know, it's a little bit of like a, you know, just misaligned incentives all the way down, right? Like, there's no real partnership here. It's just one random person at massive corporation who, like, you know, is willing to sell something and maybe get a press release released somewhere, like on a minor part of the corporate website that won't get pushed out to like any reporters outside of crypto. And, you know, I don't know, in the end, like, that's really all it is. And the people that like get hurt are like the retail people that think that this is real. And like, there's some real, you know, Microsoft or big company partnership, but nothing like that. I mean, come on, that's not the way these things work. I'm curious as to your perspective as a former CoinDesk reporter. Like, when people come pitch you this, you know, you've got the whole incentive, right, to get views on your things, and you know that this will get views, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, just two things for context here. One, we have this quote from them, which is just full of buzzwords. By fusing Aptos technology with Microsoft Azure OpenAI service capabilities, we aim to demonstrate the use of blockchain enabling users to seamlessly onboard to Web3 and innovators to develop new exciting decentralized applications using AI. I love that. I can't believe someone wrote that. That's like disgusting. Okay. And the second thing is they talked about the actual use cases here. And there's an AI chatbot that will help developers write code and move. And then also Aptos is going to put a node on Microsoft Azure. That's like it. That's what the press release was. And yet this got picked up by so many places. It's like super frustrating. Now, to your question here, like as a reporter, yeah, we got these like all the time. And the good reporters would weed them out and be like, I'm not writing about that because there's no actual value here. This does not help me out long term. And three, it hurts the ecosystem because people do look at this and go buy it, right? Like, you talk to a normie friend, and they will be like, oh, Aptos has a token and they just did something with Microsoft. I should go buy it. I don't know if you remember Pi Token, PI. It was like really, really big during the bull market.
Oh, I do vaguely recall that. Yeah.
Yeah. I got hit by a lot of people about Pi Token. And I was like, what is Pi Token? I have never heard of this. And all these people be like, you haven't heard of Pi Token. You're winning crypto. Have you not heard about it? You can mine it on your phone. You just have to download it and you start earning Pi Token. You don't have to do anything. You have a ton of money. It's the same thing. Like,
that was the one that the two Stanford PhDs were briefly on and then they quit. Yeah. Two super legit cryptographers. That one of the founders, she, if I'm thinking about the right thing, and I'm pretty sure I am, I was at a party at Stanford Blockchain, like after, you know, like an after party. And it was like maybe five, like, you know, relatively VCs were like standing around in a circle. And this lady literally came out and literally two hand pushed me out of the circle to pitch everybody else. Like, she didn't know who I was. She just like literally two hand pushed me and started like pitching them Pi Token, which I think was called something different back then. But just hilarious. Like, I literally stood there and I was like, did she just literally like I was miming her like pushing me? Like, it's like everyone was looking at me and not her. Like, anyway, it was bizarre. This is actually at Polychain's offices too, this particular incident.
I don't understand why Google and Microsoft and others like keep pushing with these things. I guess like the corporations there are so big they just lose track of like who's in what partnership. Because there is functionally nothing here, but people will go buy Aptos because of this partnership with their, you know, AI chatbot. Live.
I mean, hey, you have a product of selling cloud services. Somebody wants to buy it. They insist on some press release that no one's ever going to read, you think. you say some fluffy language, you know, like as a middle manager or whatever, right? Like, it's your number go up and that's all you care about. Like, it's the tragedy of misaligned incentives, right? Where everybody has the incentive to like make this seem like a thing, but it's not a thing.
Yeah.
Despite our earlier comment, right? Like, I think some people think I'm like some Ethereum maximalist, despite the fact that I always say I'm not a maximalist. And I have, you know, I hold some other chains, like the legit ones. I have gotten recruited like by like plenty of chains over the years. And I usually talk to them just to see if like at the very least, whether I can get an offer so that I know like, you know, whether they value me at all. Oftentimes the offers are hilariously insulting. like hilariously insulting, as if I was like a 22-year-old right out of undergrad that like was willing to take, you know, like the most entry level job and pitch them constantly in return for that sort of like compensation, which is, you know, absurd on multiple levels. One in particular, I went kind of deep with, and I don't even want to give them I don't even want to say who, because I don't want to give them any sort of attention, because like at the time it seemed legit. And so I was talking to them, and then I sort of found out who was behind it. And, you know, then they gave me an offer and it was not nearly as good as they claimed it was going to be.
Yeah,
but it was not bad. It actually had a decent amount of guaranteed money in it. And then it had a decent amount of, you know, like if you pump this and you can make it go up or whatever, like you'll make money here. They literally told me like, look, we've got this whole announcement lineup of things like Microsoft and Google and all these things that are going to make the token go up. And I was like, yeah, okay, but that doesn't like, I mean, I get that you're pitching me something where like I would make money, but like these are all like BS. Like I'm not going to sign up and promote this. And by the way, my audience is like, I would hope, I'm pretty sure, is smarter than that and it wouldn't work, right? Like,
I mean, Evan's turned on us.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm open to like doing stuff at other chains, but like I'm not going to scam people. Like, I don't know. The other thing is, you know, people often try to get me to do other things like Weekend, whatever. And, you know, I don't know.
Weekend Aptos News coming soon to a screen near you.
There is another rash of SIM swaps. And so a friend pinged me and said, you know, hey, like last night I almost got SIM swapped. And, you know, it is the relatively standard playbook where all of a sudden I was getting text messages, like 10 text messages per minute. And in the middle of that, there's a text message from my cell phone provider, which said, you have 10 minutes. Your SIM is being ported, like, because you asked for it to be, you have 10 minutes to say no. Otherwise it will go through. And you're getting spammed, like, because the people are trying to steal your cell phone number. You're getting spammed with all these things, and so you don't know, and so you stop checking your text messages and you miss the one from your cell phone provider. Well, I said, I can tell you right now that you have T-Mobile. And my friend actually didn't get SIM swapped because he happened to see the thing and he press deny, and so they didn't steal his phone number, but he had T-Mobile. And I said, like, look, like, I don't know, are you not paying attention at all? Like, I unfortunately feel very bad for people when they have their property stolen or whatever, but at this point in 2023, if you work in crypto and you use your real name and you're on T-Mobile, I find it hard to feel bad for you because you are asking for your phone number to be SIM swapped. Like, there is no, I cannot put it more bluntly than that. Like, you are almost to blame at this point. Like, it is very well known. Something like 99% of all SIM swaps are T-Mobile. And not to say that it doesn't happen if you're on, like, I think AT&T is number two, and I think Verizon is number three. But if you are on T-Mobile and you use your real name in crypto, or even if you don't, you're probably going to get SIM swapped. And so, like, you know, if you're willing to stay on T-Mobile, you should just, you know, it should either like be your burner, or you should just be okay with the fact that they're going to steal your phone number every now and again. Like, you know, but
I'm cool with that. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah. It's crazy that T-Mobile doesn't get sued. I mean, that they haven't been like, you know, some lawyer hasn't taken them down for, you know, billions of dollars or whatever, because it really is so negligent, and it's mass negligence on their fault, on their part now. And this isn't even new to crypto, right? Because like, if you have a brokerage account and, you know, you go back 20 years ago, you have a brokerage account and your phone number's on it, and it's, you know, your SMS is two factor, you know, like 20 years ago. Well, somebody hacks into your brokerage account, you have your life savings in your IRA, but it's in, you know, and they just trade it all away, and, you know, it's gone. Like, nobody will ever do anything for you. Tough luck. So
the sad thing is, like, courts even don't enforce what happens here. So, like, the most representative cases back in 2017, there's a SIM swapping case where a guy managed to bribe someone at AT&T and they stole $24 million from a crypto investor. And the guy went after AT&T, tried to sue AT&T, and the courts went the other way and said, like, no, it's not AT&T's fault. So that was resolved back in April of this year, so 5 years afterwards. But, like, yeah, I think at this point, it's most people's job. If you own digital assets, like, be smart about it. The biggest thing I always tell people, and if you have comments about this, let us know in the YouTube comments below, or just, like, give us an email. I say, like, go get a Verizon business account, because there's, like, extra layers of security that way, where you have to do, like, additional steps to be able to do some sort of SIM swap. There's different protections you can put on top of it. Like, you don't have to have, like, a regular off the phone hook there. It's a little simpler.
Yeah, I don't think that's the right advice either. So I'm also sort of like I think Verizon Business is not that good either. Like, most people I know that are super paranoid have Google Fi.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, one thing is, you
give your phone up. Yeah.
Don't give your phone out, but I mean, people can get it anyway, so that doesn't necessarily work. You know, I don't think there's any great. Like, I think the only real advice is don't ever use your phone number on anything, you know, like,
but it's not ever. Like, very practical, right? Like, you have to keep your phone at some point. Like, I was trying to get the YouTube accounts and the Google accounts up for the show. It couldn't get into anything without using a phone number. I couldn't use a Google Fi account. I tried using some of, like, the crypto versions out there. You buy a phone number with crypto. Google detected it, didn't allow it. I'm like, honestly confused how you're able to operate in this world without giving out your phone number. It's, like, pretty impressive. I think
it goes back to a theme from last episode, which is how corrupt Web2 UX is, because the identification layer is the phone, and yet it is the most insecure layer out there in the legacy Web2 financial system, whatever you want to say. Like, it's been known for 20 years. Courts won't do anything about it. People have their life savings stolen all the time, like, even before crypto. And nobody gives a crap. You're on your own. Tough luck. Like, you should be super paranoid about your phone number, because people can steal crazy amounts of things. Even when you think you lock it down, even when you're paranoid, like, you know, somebody gets into your, you know, your Facebook account. I mean, even if they don't steal anything, it can be very painful, and it can feel very, you'll feel very violated, right? Like, somebody could download all of your messages. You know, who knows what you've got in your private cloud storage. You know, maybe, like, the funny things you sent your girlfriend, like, you know, get leaked. I mean, I don't know, you know, like, a million things could happen. The funny jokes you tell to your friends that are maybe not PC, like, any of that stuff, right? I mean, like, my take is you should not use your phone number for anything. Get burners, you know, whatever.
It's probably fair advice. Something I need to look into more. Okay. I think we shut it down for this week. Thanks for listening to the Web3 Builders podcast. Will, that's Evan. Give us a follow on YouTube. Subscribe to us. That's nice. Also, give us a rating on your podcast platform of choice. See you next week.
Follow us on Twitter. There will be a giveaway.
Oh, Twitter giveaway. Peace.